Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And thank you for joining us here today on AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by our friends at Cenex. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Thanks for joining us. Coming up on today's program, we have a lot of ground to cover. We are going to talk about a new FAA exemption for drone swarms for Texas-based drone company Helio. We're going to talk with their CEO, Arthur Erickson, about that coming up here in segment two today. What could that mean for application of certain herbicides and things like that for farmers? We're going to talk about that coming up here in just a little bit. Also, in segment three today, we're going to get some thoughts on where things stand in regards to the farm bill and get a legal perspective on things from Francine Miller, professor and attorney with the University of Vermont Law School. She's going to join us here in segment three today. And then we'll take a look at some of the latest news, headlines in agriculture to wrap up our program in segment four. Today's AOA, again, brought to you by Cenex. Extreme cold temps put your vehicles to the test. Cenex premium lubricants are made with quality ingredients to keep you going. Learn more online. Just go to Cenex.com. Let's start the show and take a look at what is happening in the market trade on Friday. Seeing a little bit of a rally continuing in the wheat markets. Is this a sign of something long-term or not? We're going to talk about things with Dwayne Bussey from Bolt Marketing joining us here on AOA. Dwayne, good to have you back on the show. Hope you're doing well, my friend.
Yeah, doing great. How are you doing, Jesse?
Hey, you know, I'm doing all right. The coffee cup is full, and we are just we're working our way through a day here. And looking at the markets, I'm happy to see this wheat rally continuing. Yeah. I'm wondering, though, is this something that's going to be short-lived, or are we seeing a bit of a turn here? What do you think, Dwayne?
Well, you have every right to be hesitant when it comes to a wheat rally, right? We've been disappointed so many times, but I mean, everyone's watching 572 in the May Chicago wheat contract today. That's where the 50-day moving average is. Man, a close above that would be great. My guess is we probably can't quite do it, but I think there's something a little bit more to this. You know, obviously, we've come way off the highs from last couple of years, right, with the Russia-Ukraine war, but that stuff is escalating again. The war, the tensions over there. Russia bombed a lot of the infrastructure at the Odessa ports again last night in Ukraine, and that really kind of got this rally started. And with funds short the market, we could rally fairly decent, but then, you know, rallies are going to be met by probably some farmers selling and hedging, because you got a really good looking winter wheat coming in Oklahoma and rain in the eastern Corn Belt where the soft wheat is. So you'll see some tug of war back and forth, I'm sure.
Well, I'm wondering, too, if wheat can continue to get a bit of a lift here, can that spill over and be the leader for corn and soybeans potentially? Because really, Dwayne, since the USDA reports last week, the grain markets, corn and soybeans specifically, have been kind of ugly, for lack of a better term here.
Yeah, you're right. But I know, I'm glad you brought that up. I think I'm mostly excited about the wheat rally because it's not going lower anymore, because I think that pulled corn back down a little bit here. And I think the funds are really good at protecting their short positions after a bullish report like last week. But, you know, I'll be interested to watch a commitment traders reports moving forward. I really don't think they want to be short the corn market or soybean market, really, at least not this heavily going into a growing season. But I don't know, trade talk is that they're going to hold short through planting season and then see what the weather's like. But man, all it takes is a little planting delay in the east and or something, just a little weather scare, and I think it would spike that market pretty good. But I don't have that weather scare right now to get the market to spike up, but I don't think they want to stay short.
Well, and to that point, on the corn side, you and I have discussed this as well, that 90 million acre number from USDA last week. It almost feels like the trade, just the way things have traded here this week, that the trade action already believes that that number is not going to hold as we go through the growing season. And I think that might have been some of the reasoning why this corn market's looked a little rough here this week, Dwayne.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm definitely in that camp. You and I talked about it last week that this that acreage number probably doesn't stick. And maybe the trade sees that too. But I don't know. I mean, you go back and look historically, the total principal crop acres don't really go much higher off the March 31st intentions. We can go sharply lower, but that's due to prevent plant. But no, I'm with you, Jesse. I mean, prevent plant, the biggest state for prevent plant is always North Dakota. And mm-hmm. I got to tell you, it's dry right now up there and there's no snow and the forecast looks great. I don't see how those total principal crop acres don't go higher. And I'm assuming it goes to corn. I mean, we'll see as the what the price does this spring as farmers get rolling. But boy, they love to plant corn.
They do. They do. We're talking with Dwayne Bussey from Bolt Marketing here on AOA. Dwayne, let's go over to livestock. This avian flu HPAI outbreak in dairy cattle has had this cattle market just on a topsy-turvy trade all week long. Here we are again Friday, starting the day lower, just more back and forth here. Feels really psychological because a lot of the activity at the sale barn still is very bullish, it seems. So, I mean, your perspective on all of this activity in the cattle market this week?
Yeah, quick summary is I think we're trending lower now. We had a great run. Fundamentals are still bullish, no doubt. But boy, the carcass weights are getting higher and packers are doing their smart thing of buying cattle and then keeping some of them in feedlots very long. The only real bullish thing out there is the price of cull cows, man. They want them bought and slaughtered right away. So demand is still there, but I think packers are going to start to get ownership or gain momentum back. I bet you they probably don't even buy cash cattle next week and that'll force the market a little bit lower. And the funds, you know, with this whole bird flu and uncertainty, I don't think they want to be long this market anymore. And they got a few contracts to exit. So, and then the chart doesn't look great either, does it? So I'm afraid we got a downward trend coming, you know, maybe feeders dropped to 230, something like that. I mean, how far they go doesn't matter as much as just to know maybe we should be hedged and protected here right now.
I was just going to say, if I'm not hedged in this cattle market, I would have to think that it's probably a good time to maybe look at doing something there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're hitting the LRP insurance really hard today for calves for next year. You know, yeah, we've come off the highs, but you're talking about close to the same prices that you just sold your calves for. I mean, that's a lot of capital investment out there. Just get it protected and hope I'm wrong.
Yeah. Dwayne, another thing too, I'm keeping an eye on the energy markets and gold. Gold is back higher again here. It feels like this gold market's kind of following cocoa as the next parabolic type market. Is that something you're watching as well?
Well, I am starting to watch that. Now, I'm not much of a what I would call outside markets or different markets getting away from my row crop trader, but I'm noticing in the commodity sector, there's, like you said, cocoa, now metals are just skyrocketing higher. Kind of makes me wonder if commodities aren't going to be an investment this summer for the funds, the big traders. So that makes me excited. We just need that spark. Back to that, we need a weather scare a little bit to get the corn market excited. Then things could happen here yet for us.
Dwayne, if folks were to reach out to you at Bolt Marketing, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can call us here directly, 605-448-2365, or they can look us up online at boltmarketingllc.com.
Dwayne Bussey with Bolt Marketing, thanks for joining us on AOA. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, coming up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Lubricants, we're going to talk drones with Arthur Erickson from Helio on the way next here on AOA Agriculture of America.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Every Tuesday, we're sitting around the table, sponsored by CHS, where we'll be talking with folks from throughout the cooperative system. Join us as we discover what makes cooperatives unique when there are more options to do business than ever before. We'll learn how farmers and ranchers like you benefit from a system where decisions are made by the members that own it. Tune in every Tuesday for Around the Table or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more. When news happens in agriculture or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Agriculture of America, AOA, brought to you by our friends at Cenex and their premium lubricants and premium greases. Trust your local experts at your nearest Cenex location or visit them online at cenex.com. Well, the Federal Aviation Administration has issued an exemption for drone swarm agriculture, a method of seeding and spraying crops at a fraction of the traditional cost. And we're going to learn more about this. The company that has gotten the first exemption is Helio, and with us now is their CEO, Arthur Erickson. Arthur, thanks for joining us on AOA today. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me, Jesse.
So give us just a little bit of background first here, Arthur, on this FAA exemption. The way I understand it, it allows fleets of drones weighing over 55 pounds to fly together and deliver a meaningful payload, so to speak. So talk about this for us a little bit and fill us in if I'm describing that correctly.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad you pointed out the specificity of the 55-pound weight limit, because actually swarm flying was previously allowed for drones under 55 pounds. But as you might imagine, any drones that are able to do meaningful acreage way more than 55 pounds these days in the ag space. So basically what it means is the FAA has allowed a single operator to command up to three drones above this 55-pound limit at the same time without any other person present. So it used to be that if you had a drone over 55 pounds, you'd have to have not only a single pilot out there, but a second person, a spotter, which they call the visual observer. So it was two people total for each drone. If you had three drones out there, you'd have to have six people, which is ridiculous, right, from a labor economic standpoint. So now you can have one operator to three drones, and that really ties into the actual logic of drones, which is to extend or force multiply the productivity of a single operator.
Well, and with that, over 55-pound drone and having those multiple drones together now being able to do this, I just have to think, Arthur, that this is huge for farmers when we think about precision ag, seeding, spraying, getting into our fields and being able to carry, enough product to, cover a portion of a field. I have to think that this is a huge win for agriculture, precision agriculture, et cetera. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So it used to be that drones, I've been in the drone game in the ag space for about 10 years now. And so the conversations we were having when I first started the company were like, oh, that's a cute little toy, essentially. It'd be great for precision spot spraying, maybe in specialty crops, low acreage, high value. But now with this, with these larger drones, but also the ability to swarm them, you can go 150, 200, or even more acres per hour if you have enough drones out there and if they're big enough. And that is putting them on equal footing in terms of top line productivity as, say, like a self-propelled ground rig tractor sprayer, or even like a helicopter. So now it's not just, oh, these are cute little toys. These can do serious acreage, and they offer better efficacy and cost economics when it comes to spraying.
Well, and I would think too, I'm putting my agronomist hat on a little bit here. I mean, you know, this could apply as well. Say we get a really, you know, heavy set of rain showers, and normally that would keep a tractor out of a field for a couple, in some cases, a couple of days, whereas, you know, being able to go out there with drones instead, once the weather clears up and dries up enough, I have to think, you know, things like that are very beneficial as well, Arthur.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm down here in southern Texas, and we've had some rainstorms. It's kept people out of the field for 2 weeks now. People that don't have drones, of course. The ones that do have drones can go still spray their burn down herbicide if they need to, and really get out there even despite the physical conditions, to your point.
Well, let's talk about, as far as the work you've been doing with Helio, I know you mentioned you've been in the drone game now for 10 plus years. There's been a lot of research and development you guys have put into this. I mean, from your perspective and for the farmer perspective, you know, when we're looking at adopting drone use on our farms, should they be working with a company full time such as Helio, or, you know, what are some different things that farmers can do here? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so you can either, and this is what we've traditionally done for the most part, is we sold directly to the farmer themselves. So the farmer buys the drone, they receive training from us on how to use it, and the drone flies itself, right? So for the most part, it's a fairly easy learning curve, relatively speaking. And then the farmer themselves has a team, or they individually go out and use the drone to go spray fungicide or herbicide or whatever it is that they have to do for that season. And so that's how it's typically looked. But I will say in the past 2 or 3 years, we've seen a growing market segment, which is these agribusinesses that are offering these spraying services to third parties, right? So they're buying drones from Helio, and then they're going out and they're spraying, you know, 50 farmers in their county. And so if you're a farmer, you can either buy them, like we described earlier, or you can just hire a applicator to come out. And by this point, the market has enough operators to where pretty much in any county in the U.S., you could find at least one or two companies willing to come out and spray your crops with drones. So you're going to see, hopefully, better costs when you do that, because they have lower operating margins, which means they can pass savings on to you. But also, you're going to have higher quality spray. There's going to be less drift. There's going to be more bang for your buck, essentially.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point there, and good thoughts. So I wonder, Arthur, as we look to the future here, getting this FAA exemption, of course, a huge step. Where do we go from here? What are some of the advancements you're looking for that farmers need to keep in mind here moving forward?
Yeah, so this swarm exemption really is just the tip of the iceberg, basically. And I've explained this before in other interviews, but people outside looking don't really understand how much of a philosophical shift this is for the FAA. Because now the FAA is finally saying, hey, we trust these autonomous systems enough to let the drones operate at least some of the time on their own. Because you're admitting that if a single operator can fly three drones, this means the operator can't possibly be directly piloting all three drones at the same time. That's impossible. So the FAA has finally said, hey, we trust autonomy. We're accepting that the technology has advanced to that point. And so this just leads to eventually taking the human completely out of the equation, which is what we're all trying to eventually achieve. That's, you know, drone in a box solution, where you plop the drone out there, it's going to go analyze the crops, spray on its own, refill itself, recharge itself, and the human doesn't have to come back and babysit it, right? The human comes maybe once every few days and moves the location of the drone in the box solution and just operates like that, right? So we're getting to full autonomy here, and the FAA is finally along for the ride.
Well, it's definitely a big win. And I think, too, you know, I mentioned a lot about seeding and spraying, but of course, you know, some of the applications we've already seen with drones for scouting, for instance, you know, the days of having to walk every single inch of your field necessarily they're not over, but I mean, they could be pretty close here by utilizing drones to get out there and scout your fields too, right, Arthur?
Yeah. That side of the industry is even more developed than the spray drones, right? Because that was already 20 years or so maybe that was beginning here in the States. Spray drones have only been around for maybe 6 or 7 years. So that's definitely coming along. It gets better every year. People deploy more and more powerful AI tools to do that analysis. Right now, to your point, I think a human is still necessary to at least check the work of these models.
Yep.
But maybe in 5-6 years, you won't even need an agronomist to do some of the basic scouting.
Well, as we are wrapping up our conversation here today, again, great stuff here with the FAA exemption. And Arthur, anything final you'd want to mention for growers, anything we haven't talked about, or you want to reiterate to folks as they're thinking about the use of spray drones and more on their operation?
Yeah, just want to say that it's still early enough the season. If you're interested in getting a drone, whether that be from Helio or some of these other companies, there's still time to do it. So that's my shameless plug. I'd say that if you were worried about productivity, and we talked about this, the thing to understand now is that you can actually get several hundreds, if not thousands of acres done per day with these drones. If you have the right nurse trailer setup, if you have the right team, the right training, you can do it. So don't let the productivity hold you back anymore.
Well, and Arthur, as well, if folks want to learn more about Helio, I'm sure they can online. What's the easiest way to find you guys and learn more?
You can go to our website, which is www.hyl.io. The domain is IO. I know it's a little confusing, but we also have helio.com. Fantastic. So that forwards to hyl.io as well.
Fantastic. Helio.com or hyl.io for more information on Helio. And with that, their CEO, Arthur Erickson. Arthur, thanks for joining us here on Agriculture of America, telling us more about the FAA exemption and spray drones. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yep. Thank you, Jesse.
Really cool stuff. Talking technology here, spray drones and more. Helio CEO Arthur Erickson. Again, find them online, hyl.io, or go to helio.com for more information. All right, coming up here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Hard work, long hours, and extreme conditions aren't new. Cenex Premium Diesel will keep your equipment running smoothly. Learn more at your nearest Cenex location or go online to cenex.com for more information. We're going to talk Farm Bill. We're going to have a conversation with Francine Miller. She is with the University of Vermont Law School, and she is a Farm Bill expert. We're going to get her thoughts on the current state of the Farm Bill on the way next here on AOA.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Young farmers don't listen to the radio, right? Wrong. In a recent survey, 74% of young producers said they get their most important agricultural information from their trusted farm radio station. Surprised? Don't be. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Radio is the perfect companion because it goes with you everywhere. Whether you're in the shop, on the combine, or in the truck, farm radio is right there with you. This message brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
You're listening to AOA. I'm Jody Heemstra with This Check at Markets for the American Ag Network. Corn exports up and ethanol production is running higher than USDA projections. There's even reason to believe USDA will raise both corn used for ethanol and exports in the April WASDE report next week. Weather in the U.S. is mostly clear in the middle of the nation, and after another storm system moving in the west, it's likely we'll see a warmer and drier pattern into May. There's very little rain for the western Midwest and plains, allowing corn seeding to begin. in the Delta. Heavy and unwanted rain is expected to delay seeding efforts. In Brazil, rain will hit the driest parts of the corn area with heavy showers projected for the 10-day period. The 11 to 15-day portion of the weather models looks to be drier. Brazil's corn pollination will be from mid-April into early May. Soybeans, palm oil futures are correcting downward for a second straight day after reaching new contract highs on Wednesday. Bean oil futures are higher despite that. Brazil soy harvest is continuing and is likely to be near 80% completed by the weekend. Expectations are for few changes in the domestic soybean balance sheet next Thursday, but there is a possibility USDA could cut U.S. exports while raising crush a bit to offset that. For wheat, there is apparently up to 500,000 metric tons of wheat loaded and awaiting certificates to sale. However, Russia continues to offer the world's cheapest wheat along with Ukraine. The latter has been able to export 14.2 million metric tons of wheat despite the ongoing war and constant attacks on Black Sea ports. Friday's tenders include Japan seeking just under 114,000 metric ton of wheat, that from U.S., Canada, and Australia. Tunisia is reported to have booked 75,000 metric tons of soft milling wheat, which is an optional origin. For the American Ag Network, I'm Jody Heemstra.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Trust your local experts at your nearest Cenex location and let them find the right premium diesel or premium lubricants for your equipment. Learn more at Cenex.com. Well, right now, we want to take a look at the farm bill and have a conversation as we are watching the ongoing battle, the back and forth on Capitol Hill, trying to get a farm bill done. Here with insight and a legal perspective on things, she is the senior staff attorney and professor with the Center for Agriculture and Food Systems at Vermont Law and Graduate School, Francine Miller, joining us here today on AOA. Fran, thanks so much for the time. Hope you're doing well.
Thanks, Jesse. Thanks for having me. Glad to talk with you today.
Well, let's start with, again, we kind of have this back and forth on Capitol Hill and this gridlock. It's kind of a heavy lift to try and get the farm bill done right now. It's an election year. There's a lot of partisan fighting going on between the food and nutrition side versus the commodity side of the farm bill. Those are some of the things we know, but there's a lot of things that, even though the 2018 legislation was fairly good, there's things that need to be updated. Give us kind of your perspective on what we know now and where things stand in terms of getting a new farm bill done.
Sure. I mean, I think my intel is probably similar to yours and that of people who follow these issues. It does not seem likely that we're going to get a farm bill this year. Although I think it is important that we continue to work for the things we feel are important to include in that bill. You know, they, Congress and the partisan fighting, as you're mentioning, it just does not seem that it is going to happen this year, Jesse.
Yeah, and that's kind of the same thing I'm hearing as well, which is that's not something we want to see, because there's to what I was mentioned earlier, there's a lot of things that we need updated. We need more certainty on certain things outside of just our general thoughts when it comes to row crops and livestock, but thinking about land stewardship and regenerative agriculture, farmers' rights, things like this. Those are all things that I know you are looking at as well in terms of this farm bill. Talk about that a little bit for us.
My work tends to focus on, as you're mentioning, on the smaller acreage farms. Those farms with fewer than 180 acres, my research has shown that they make up 70% of all farms in the U.S., and they are just vital to rural economic growth, to food security, to our local food supply chains. I mean, we saw this with the pandemic when the national grocery stores were out of product. People went to their local farmers for food. And these farmers, despite their very substantial contributions to the national economy, they only receive 12% of federal payments to farms. So my work is really focused on trying to help those kinds of farmers access more programs with USDA, from USDA. So there's a few bills, few marker bills that are out there that we have either worked on or are supporting. Just to back up for a second, the Center for Ag and Food Systems at Vermont Law School works with partner organizations, with community-based organizations and other academic institutions to lend our law and policy expertise to help support a more sustainable and just and equitable food system. And so, for example, we worked with the National Family Farm Coalition on a bill that was introduced by Cory Booker called the Farmland for Farmers Act. And this bill discourages corporate speculation, both foreign and domestic, in farmland. And it keeps farmland in the hands of the people who feed us and who support their surrounding communities. You know, Jesse, there's a lot of talk in Congress now about China and foreign investment and all of that. The real issue, in my opinion, is domestic corporate abuse and investment in farmland. And that is a really big problem in our country because it keeps new and beginning farmers off the land. It keeps the price of land really high. It incentivizes bad practices for the environment because the investors want big returns, and so the farmers aren't incentivized to build soil health and do things that help mitigate climate change. It's really a big problem in our country.
To your point there, I'm going to go down this rabbit hole a little bit, but sure. I would think that from what you're saying, and I think it's really no secret either, I would tend to agree here that it seems like a lot of current farm policy is really geared more towards large corporations instead of the average American family farmer, Fran.
Yes, Jesse, and I think that that is happening because there is tremendous amount of lobbying and monies going from big corporate investment, pension funds, et cetera, to Congress. And the smaller ordinary people, your neighbor, your father, the folks down the street, they just don't have that kind of political power to obtain the support that corporate America receives.
So how do we make our voices heard in a farm bill discussion like this that we know there's angles from all sides here? Every part of the country obviously has different concerns too when it comes to what crops are grown, things like that. It's an election year, of course. We have no clue what things are going to look like here after November. And you mentioned, political power. I guess, I think about constituents talking to their lawmakers. I mean, is it that simple in terms of trying to get your voice heard as far as farm bill, things that folks want to see in this farm bill?
I think those kinds of things are really, really important. I think as much as Congress is influenced by big money and big industry, it is also the case that legislative staffers keep track of the calls that they get in support of certain bills. And people like the National Family Farm Coalition or the National Sustainable Ag Coalition, the National Farmers Union, there are different organizations that fly, the National Young Farmers Coalition, they do fly-ins to D.C. And it's really important that farmers participate in those things, that farmers call their congresspeople. I mean, let's face it, it's really difficult farming as a viable occupation these days, especially as a smaller farmer, because you don't get the same amount of support and you're, you know, growing crops or, you know, managing livestock or, you know, trying to farm, as difficult as that is in this day and age. And then you're also marketing and you're also doing accounting and you're also raising your family and you're the most entrepreneurial of the entrepreneurs. You're doing everything. But it's really important that they hear from farmers, because farmers' stories are really important in this debate. I just think the day-to-day life of farmers has to be amplified.
In terms of if what we expect to happen and that we delay this farm bill another year, any major concerns you have with delaying it another year that we really need to keep an eye on here, Fran?
Well, even in the 2018 farm bill, there were provisions that USDA really took and is taking a long time to implement. Mm-hmm. And so the longer the farm bill gets delayed, the longer good programming gets delayed from being implemented. For example, in the 2018 farm bill, there was a provision called the heirs property relending program. I don't know, Jesse, if you follow this issue at all, but heirs property, H-E-I-R-S, heirs property, is a big, big issue for Black farmers, for farmers in Appalachia, for places where there have historically been a lack of legal services, because the deed to the land remains in the name of an ancestor. And so it's very difficult to participate in USDA programs, get mortgages, et cetera, et cetera. So this program that was promulgated in the 2018 Farm Bill gave the possibility for lending money to heirs property owners for them to resolve some of their title issues so they could get the land in their own names. But that program is still not completely implemented. So that's a real blow to farmers who are waiting for the possibility of these loans.
Well, that is a very interesting topic. I confess it's one I don't know a lot about. I'm going to have to go do some research now. Fran, before we let you go, anything final you want to share or reiterate with folks here today?
I think it's really important to look at what can be helpful to the smaller farmers in our country. So the Farmland for Farmers Act is one of the marker bills. There's a bill called the Increasing Land Access, Security, and Opportunities Act, which is being advocated for by the National Young Farmers Coalition. There's a Fair Credit for Farmers Act, which is also part of the National Family Farm Coalition portfolio of bills that they're supporting. Let's support small farmers and keep our country fed.
Well, with that, senior staff attorney and professor with the Center for Agriculture and Food Systems at Vermont Law and Graduate School, Fran Miller, thanks for joining us here on AOA. We'll get you back on the show again real soon. We appreciate the time.
Thanks so much, Jesse.
We'll be back with more AOA brought to you by Cenex right after this.
Now. We tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But sometimes we don't see what's right in front of us. victory over cancer is in front of us. Right now, cancer research is saving lives. Cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to new discoveries and new treatments and ultimately, one day, victory over cancer. Give to the V Foundation. Right now, one out of every two men and one out of every three women will get cancer in their lifetime. Now is your moment. You may save someone you love. 100% of your donation goes directly to game-changing research. 100%. Donate at V.org. Because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
In Iraq, our truck hit a roadside bomb. I had about 16 surgeries on my hand so that I could regain function. And when I came home, I needed a new roof due to a storm. And my electrical was deemed unsafe. And I was about to lose homeowner's insurance as well. I didn't really know where to go in order to get help. And so I applied for Operation Homefront Critical Financial Assistance Program. They've really been a blessing. Operation Homefront is a safety net. A lot of veterans, they fall through the cracks sometimes, and Operation Homefront, they catch us. It's been a blessing to us. It's a blessing to other veteran families, and it's good to know that when we come home, there are people who are there that care about us and want to see us do well and want to see us succeed, and we feel it, and we appreciate that. I would say you guys are angels behind closed doors.
Visit OperationHomefront.org to learn more.
This is Around the Table, where we explore the benefits of cooperative ownership. Today, Dan Maurer, a member of the CHS Government Affairs team in Washington, D.C., will provide an E15 update. Dan, what's the current policy status concerning E15?
Right now, we're kind of in a holding pattern, at least for nationwide E15 from a legislative standpoint. We are working with Congress and interested parties, of course, our friends at the corn growers and our trade associations, Growth and RFA, CHS is a member of both, trying to get this push across the finish line so farmers have certainty and American drivers generally have certainty that they'll have access to lower cost, lower carbon fuels, and that ethanol is going to be with us for a long time. On the regulatory side, we are facing another short timeline for EPA to decide whether it's going to be issuing summertime waivers, emergency waivers, like it has in the previous few years. We're in talking with EPA just last week and highlighted the importance of summertime E15 for CHS, for the cooperative system, and for our farmer owners.
Well, what are the benefits of year-round E15 availability? How does it help rural communities?
E88 is going to be cheaper to fill up your tank, so the cost savings is definitely there. The environmental benefits are definitely there. Those are going to be lower carbon fuels. This administration and is really focusing on lowering the carbon footprint of particularly our transportation fuels. Ethanol does that very well. Finally, thirdly, at least for our farmer owners, it gives that guaranteed market, that known market, where our corn farmers can send bushels of corn to our ethanol plants and get that made into ethanol and then put in our gas tanks.
Dan, thanks for joining us and giving us an update on E15. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse. Always good to be here.
And thank you for joining us around the table. Learn more about the benefits of cooperative ownership at cooperativeownership.com.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA. Thanks for sticking with us here today on the program, brought to you by Cenex. Extreme cold temperatures put your vehicles to the test. Cenex premium lubricants are made with quality ingredients to keep you going. Learn more online at Cenex.com. Well, let's take a look at news headlines and a final environmental impact statement by the National Park Service and Fish and Wildlife has been released, moving one step closer to the possible reintroduction of grizzly bears in the North Cascades of Washington State. Now, U.S. Representative Dan Newhouse says it's not a huge surprise, but
I could say a lot of things about this, but I'm disappointed that the agency is on a track moving forward to bring in grizzly bears to the North Cascades when it's obvious and it's very clear that the vast majority of the residents of North Central Washington don't think that this is a good idea.
But Newhouse says that doesn't seem to matter.
I think the agency is ignoring the voice of the people that are going to have to live with the grizzly bears and deal with them on a daily basis.
And Newhouse says they're looking at their options.
You know, this is purely an agency decision, not something that Congress is approving. And so we'll see through the appropriation process, perhaps, if there's some opportunities that we can either slow it down or cause them to make a different decision.
Now, he says their reasoning behind the proposal is flawed.
I got to say that this is another example of the Biden administration just ignoring the people in favor of others who don't even live in the area that, you know, have environmental or other concerns, but the people that actually have to live with it every single day, they're being ignored.
And Newhouse adds the proposal is wrong on so many different levels. Well, a human case of highly pathogenic avian influenza was found in Texas in a worker that was working on one of the affected dairy cattle farms. The virus has been rampant over the last decade, but it stayed mostly bird to bird. Well, a case found in dairy cows, now moving over to one human, is causing concerns of a new form of spread. While she thinks it's good to be cautious, Renee Anthony, the center director of the Great Plains Center for Agricultural Health, says there was a case in 2022 of a transmission from bird to human.
That hasn't happened since. So finding out what's going on in Texas, it's gone from bird to cattle to human. And so we're a little bit more concerned than we have been in the past. There may be, you know, a limited isolated case happening in Texas, but we really need to be prepared for the next step.
Now, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention says to avoid diseased or dead animals. Anthony says if a farmer can't do that,
sorry, guys, put back on some respiratory protection and do some hand washing. So we're really looking at more than just wearing those cloth masks that we used before. We're really looking at wearing these, you know, N95s, if we can get our hands on those when we're working around sick cattle. The less we are breathing in air that may be contaminated with the virus, the lower our chance of inhaling that virus and having a mutated form that's going to affect us.
And the Great Plains Center for Agricultural Health has avian influenza resources for producers, including best practices and good protective equipment recommendations, which can be found on its website. Well, also, as we look at the March grain stocks report from USDA, it showed a lot of old crop grain is in storage on farms across rural America. Joe Jansen, an agricultural economist with the University of Illinois, says farmers are holding a lot of grain.
The quarterly grain stocks numbers for both corn and soybeans came in line with expectations, about 8.3 billion bushels of corn, 1.8 billion bushels of soybeans. That's pretty much right in line with the average guess from the trade. But the difference was that those bushels are much more substantially than in the past being held on farm.
And that will make marketing more of a challenge in 2024.
The corn stocks and soybean stocks very much in line last year in terms of off-farm stocks, but on-farm stocks growing by 20 to 25% relative to a year ago at this time. That means the farmer has a significant marketing challenge ahead of him in what looks like to be pretty challenging marketing conditions.
Well, planting an estimated 90 million acres of corn this year doesn't bode well for future corn prices.
even you plug that 90 million acreage number into a balance sheet, you still get growing corn stocks at the end of the next marketing year.
And once again, that's Joe Jansen with the University of Illinois. While time is running out for the Biden EPA to decide on a summertime waiver for E15 sales this summer until a more permanent rule allowing those sales takes effect next year. Now, the Renewable Fuels Association estimates E15 sales soared by over 1 billion gallons last year, an 8% boost from 2022, largely due to EPA summertime waivers. But RFA Senior Vice President for Government Affairs Troy Breedenkamp says the Environmental Protection Agency must decide soon on a waiver for this summer ahead of a more lasting change next year.
Many of the decisions at a terminal space need to be made by May 1st. So obviously April is when they need to be hearing from the administration what the outcome is going to be for this summer.
Breedenkamp says last year's emergency waiver decision was announced on April 28th. Prompting his hope of action the last week of this month. Meantime, the ethanol industry is waiting for the administration to decide final greenhouse gas modeling known as GREET that will determine must-have tax breaks for sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF, a huge potential new market.
This is a critical decision for this administration when they want their grand challenge of 3 billion gallons of sustainable aviation fuel by 2030 to happen. It really cannot happen without row crop-based biofuel. And so it's a critical decision for them to get right. We're hopeful that it will be done right. And if it takes a little extra time, we're okay with that.
Now, the ethanol industry was hoping for an announcement on the GREET model, a final decision last month for modeling for SAF that will determine the tax breaks needed to make the fuel affordable for the airlines. SAF is seen as a potential 36 billion gallon new market for ethanol by 2050, more than twice the current ethanol fuel use. And finally, CHS and Growmark won't pursue new collaborations after undergoing formal discussions into a potential merger or other joint business ventures in early 2024. CHS and Growmark announced the discussions in January to be fully transparent with the cooperative's member owners. But at this time, the companies have decided that they will not be pursuing any new collaborative opportunities. Well, that is all the time we have here on AOA today. And thank you for joining the program. As always, brought to you by Cenex. Downtime is a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. On the next AOA, we'll take a look at the latest Ag Economy Barometer with Dr. Jim Mintert from Purdue University's Center for Commercial Agriculture, markets with Dara Newsom from Bar Chart, and weather with DTN's Teresa Wells on the next AOA. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your card donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
If you're caring for one of the 16 million Americans living with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you probably have many questions. COPD makes it harder to breathe and worsens over time. As a caregiver, you may juggle many roles. Being connected to the right resources can help. That's why the Learn More, Breathe Better program and Respiratory Health Association created the COPD Caregivers Toolkit. This free toolkit will help you better understand the disease, prepare for doctor's appointments, navigate home life changes, help after a COPD flare-up, and stay mentally and physically healthy through it all. Help your loved one live better with COPD.
Visit nhlbi.nih.gov/COPD-caregivers.